Okay, on the third page of what I sent out today, or the second page actually, is the full book of Ovadia. Okay, the entire book is all of one chapter. Okay, so that you should have that in front of you, or a Tanakh, or a Triasar. Okay, so the main point of Ovadia is the fall of Edom. And in order to fully appreciate the way our commentaries understood what Ovadia was about, is to be a student of history. Because the fall of Edom has happened already. Edom is no longer a genealogically identifiable nation. Now, you wouldn't know that if you read Rashi or the Radak or Ramban or the commentaries, because the commentaries insisted that Edom somehow morphed into Rome, which then morphed into Christianity, Roman Catholicism, if you will. So we our sources, in some form or another, imbued into the Edomite nation Okay, do you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I'm moving the desk to the back of the room so that you can perhaps hear me better here. So everybody's turning around. Okay. I think if I stay in the back of the room, we'll be better. Okay. All right. So Ovadia speaks of an Edomite nation that was never so powerful unto itself, but that they joined with others who were powerful to destroy us. So I'd like to actually read through the entire Sefer and show through these four pages I sent out that when Edom was really, in terms of its reference in Tanakh, nine different prophets mention Edom, but not one of them mentions Edom as a power on par with, let's say, Aram, Ashur, certainly not Bavel, not Paras. Edom was a small player on the field, but were very happy to join other more powerful nations in exacting the revenge they felt they wanted against the Jews. So that's an overview of how Edom is treated. I would like to discuss a parenthetical issue regarding Ovadia. Is that one of those nine prophets, eight others, of course, besides Ovadia, one of those nine prophets that deals with Edom is Yirmiyahu. And Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu, Yechezkel, Amos, those four prophets, systematically discuss what's going to happen to a whole series of nations in the future. All four of them deal with Edom. And Yirmiyahu's dealing with Edom, chapter 49 of that book, I think I made reference to this last week, is almost exactly like Ovadia. So we'll try to...
Can you use your earphones?
What? We'll try to learn why...
Yes.
Some people are not muted. Please mute yourselves. The 212 phone number is not muted.
Okay. All right. So there is a scholarly attempt to learn, did Ovadia influence Yirmiyahu or did Yirmiyahu influence Ovadia? So for one, there is a book called Seder Olam, which is an historically referenced book from the Tanaic period that tells you when every Navi lived. And according to the Seder Olam, the Ovadia of Treasar is the same personality as an Ovadiahu in Sefer Melachim. The Ovadiahu in Sefer Melachim was a contemporary of Elisha, And that would unquestionably make the R. Ovadia, if it's the same person, would make him the originator of these words and Yirmiyahu the plagiarizer. Okay, if God told Yirmiyahu, I want you to predict what's going to happen to Edom, so Yirmiyahu probably said, why should I have to write something new? Ovadia said it already. I'll just take what he said. Okay? Again, I submit to you chapter 49 of Yirmiyahu takes just wholesale, just psukim, full psukim, straight out of our sefer. Okay? I'm not going to deal with that now. I want to read the sefer. Okay? And then we'll try to figure where Edom lies historically, and why the Gemara? The Gemara seems to say unequivocally that Edom became Rome, which ultimately became Christianity. Why do they say that? Okay, let's start with the book. All right, Chazon Ovadia, like the Haftarah 2 weeks ago, which is the Haftarah of Toldos, picks up on the relationship between the brothers. It mentions Esav and Yaakov, and last week also, Hosea in Parshas Vayetzeh also spoke about Ki Okav Vesochiv Babeten. So 3 weeks in a row, we have taken three Nevi'im in a row, right? Malachi, and then Hosea, and now Ovadia, who use a paradigm of the Yaakov and Esav relationship in terms of what's happening in their own time. I mentioned this to you last week, that when the Jews faced a mortal threat from the Arameans in their own time, so the nature of the way the prophet would address that issue was to say, well, Yaakov also faced a mortal threat from an Aramean, and God saved him, so God will save us. Right? A comparable thing today would be, Israel faces a grave threat from the Iranians, which is Persia. Right? So too, they faced a grave threat from the Persians in the Purim story when Haman, etc., his decree. And just as God saved us then, he'll save us now. That's the kind of thing that the prophets did. Okay? What's interesting is that I have three patriarchs, right? I have Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And Avram does not have to contend with a brother in the story. But he does seem to have to contend with his father. His father hands him off. This is Midrashic, of course. His father hands him off to Nimrod because Avram smashed all of his idols. And yet, somehow, Avram gets Terach to see the light. And Chazal say that Terach died after making tshuva. Yitzchak and Yishmael. There is conflict between Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yishmael is cast out of the house so as not to pose a spiritual threat to his younger brother. And Yishmael is cast out of the house. And yet Chazal say that there was a rapport. There was a rapprochement between the two brothers. And Yishmael did tshuva. And by the way, while Terach never became a Jewish name, Yishmael did. There are 13 different Yishmaels in the Talmud. 13 different ones, identifiably different ones. The Kohen Gadol, once our high priest, name was Yishmael. Right? He's one of the 10 martyrs. All right? So, because Yishmael did tshuva, so he became a rapprochement between brothers. And yet, we don't see anything like this between Yaakov and Esau. Right? So I must caution you, be very careful. Even if 50, 70 years ago, I look at the Yalkut Me'am Lo'ez, which in its English translation, right, the Torah anthology up there is the English of the Yalkut Me'am Lo'ez. The Hebrew now it's gone through so many different reiterations, but the Hebrew Yalkut Me'am Lo'ez has additional notes from recent times. It mentions the Holocaust. Right? So the Yalkut Me'am Lo'ez on Ovadia speaks of the fall of Christendom. That's a big mistake. That's a mistake. Fortunes change very quickly. Christianity happens to be in its fundamental form a great friend of the Jewish people, and not to mention Israel today. So to say that in order to verify the truth of these biblical prophecies, not only in Ovadia and in Yirmiyahu but also Daniel and the Adam is mentioned in Tehillim and Eicha. So it's very dangerous on our part to try to identify a specific community that Edom represents today in fulfillment of these prophecies. I would much prefer to say that these prophecies have already been fulfilled. And what's the point of learning them if it's in the past, right? There's a lot of point is that there might be some other nations that behave like Edom. I'll tell you this too. Amalek is no longer either. There is no Amalek. It already says in Tanakh that the remnant of Amalek is no longer identifiable and traceable. So what happened to them? It doesn't matter. We finished the job. But that's not what it is. Destroying Amalek is not a genealogically identifiable nation of people. It's an ideology. Okay? So right. Don't forget, even if they're no longer here, because we did the mechia, we still have to make sure we don't forget.
Amalek is the grandchild of Esau. What is the genealogy of Esau?
All of Amalek is part of Edom, but not all of Edom is Amalek.
Yeah, but
all of Amalek is a part of Edom. Yes, now while it's true that the Torah has a certain very harsh treatment for Amalek, the Torah's treatment for Edom is you're not allowed to hate an Edomite because he's your brother. Right? What's interesting is that a person from Amalek, it's strange to consider an Amaleki to be treated any differently than an Edomite. Edomite men and women may not join our Kehillah immediately. They have to convert for three generations and then the third generation, the grandchild of an original Edomite convert and his Edomite convert wife, right? Then the second generation converts and the third generation, then that third generation can marry a Jewish person. Yes, Agrippus. Yes. So but Amalekim, the Rashi says Amalekim don't have any such restriction on Amaleki, but Amaleki is at least an Edomite. All right, I'm just leaving you with that question. All right, Amaleki is no less than an Edomite. He is an Edomite. Edom is any descendant of Esau. Right? Okay, but let's put this aside because all of these people are no longer traceable. Okay, so I would rather historically submit to you that if Seir or Edom or anything that they represent, that they do exist, the prophecy still means something, especially.
Can't hear you again.
Yes, I hear you now, yes.
Okay, all right. If I lose you one more time, I'm going into my office. Okay, I came to the front of the room where I was hoping that it would be a little better. But okay, if I lose you one more time, I'm going to go into my office where I'm sure I can reach you.
Okay,
let's learn about the book of Ovadia. Chazon Ovadia, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim LeEdom. So why does Ovadia pick on Edom exclusively? It's one thing to be like Yirmiyahu, where he touches upon 15 nations, or Yecheskel, he touches upon 12 nations, or Yeshayahu, these prophets touched upon a whole series of nations. Why does he limit his prophecy only to Edom? So Chazal say that this Ovadia was a convert from Edom. I don't have any data from the text itself. If this is the same Ovadia that was a student of Eliyahu, so he is called Yirei Es Hashem Me'od, someone who fears God exceedingly. Okay, All right, so that tends to be the case for converts, where they go, you know, like more than the rest of the Jews. Chazon Avadya Komar Hashem Elokim LeEdom Shmua Shamanu Me'Eis Hashem. That's so strange. If it's God talking, God is talking in third person, right? We've heard a shmua. I hear something. I've heard something. It's like a shmua is like a rumor, but it's not something that everyone can readily see, right? Now, we do believe in the miracle of prophecy. Miracle of prophecy means that God extends His Spirit upon a human being who otherwise could not make this prophecy and this prediction, right? Some people are smart enough to look at the situation and make predictions, right? People are paid a lot of money to make actuarial predictions. But here, when he says Shmua Shamanu Me'es Hashem, Tzir Bagoyim Shulach, it means that I am going to deliver a message that could not be derived through reading the papers and the editorial page and make predictions about what's going on in the world. It's taken people by surprise, and only a prophet would know it. Okay, so the tzir bagoyim shulach, a tzir is another word for prophet. Okay, it's a biblical Hebrew. It just means. It's not a common terminology in the Bible, okay? But it means that seer has been sent into amidst amongst the Jacob nations. Kumu v'nakuma aleha l'milchama. We are going to fight a battle against Edom. Okay, now Edom, as far as the Jews were concerned, was just a puny little nation. He says, "Hine katon nisaticha bagoyim." You are very little amongst the Goyim. And the fact is, the books you want to see for this would be Malachim and Shoftim. Shoftim lists a series of 13 nations that wrought havoc against the Jews. Edom is never one of them. Now you can say, of course, or maybe that means that they were peaceful with us. Not so fast. They never were. Even when we were just leaving Egypt and we just asked for safe passage through their land, and we were going to pay for food and pay their vendors and be all those people paying Edomites for their groceries, and Edom still came out to battle against us rather than just let us peacefully pass. So they're troublemakers, but they never really amounted to any significant threat, not to us and not to anyone else. So hine katon nesaticha bagoyim. You're a puny little nation. Bazui atam me'od. So bazui atam me'od. Rashi in Parshas Vayishlach. Look at the end of the parsha where it lists a number of Edomite kings at the end of the parsha, and what you see is something remarkable. Not one of those eight kings is the son of the previous king. So why does that make you a bazui me'od? Because a nation that doesn't produce, that has a monarchy, where every second, there are assassinations, and then the assassin becomes the next king, and this is how the end of the northern tribes were, right? So that's called Vazui Atama'od, and then Rashi, for good measure, extends such a mantra upon the Romans. Because the Romans generally did not bequeath the palace, the Caesars rarely passed on their reign to the next two or three generations, right? Okay, so that's called Bazui Atam Ma'od. Zidon Libcha, Pasuk Gimel Hishiyecha, Shochni B'chag Ve'Sela Merom Shivto Omer B'Libo Mi Yoridei Ni'aretz. So this here is an interesting, like it's a paradox. They're arrogant, although they have low self-esteem. Right? Their low self-esteem is because they know what a non-nation they are. But at the same time, that makes them arrogant. Right? You know, it's funny. We were at the zoo this past Sunday. It said that the person showing us around said that there's the reason why it says in the Shulchan Aruch we should be az kinomer every morning. Because a leopard is the most chutzpahdik of all cats. They pick fights with animals 20 times their size. You know, they'll pick a fight. In other words, are they aware of their own deficiency in terms of the one they're fighting? Doesn't matter for us here. This is the Edom is like that. They're bazui ma'od, and yet they join fights with others and just band it along, right, in order to pick fights with much bigger fish, so to say. Okay, so now what Avadya does in the next few psukim is to show functions of their immense arrogance. Im tagbia kaneshra ve'im ben kochavim simkinecha. He's referring to them as if though they are birds. If you fly up like the eagles and put your nest among the stars, mishom aritchanu Hashem, I'll take you down from there. Okay. The next pasuk, which says, "Im ganavim ba'ulacha, im shodedei laila," if robbers came to you, and those doing violence to you at night, "Ech nidmesa halo yignevu dayam, im botrim ba'ulacha halo yashiru olelos." He says that when someone comes to steal your grapes in the vineyard, you don't steal every last grape, but that's what you do. So let me explain to you what the metaphor is. Okay? Taking every last grape from the vine, even the ones that are not edible, the ones that are not even ripe yet, is a sign of killing off everybody. It's killing off even the children, even the ones that aren't ripe yet. Let them live, let them survive. No, we want to cut them off. So this is what Edom did. Because the stronger nations, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, they would kill off all the soldiers. And then the Edomites would come in and mop up the, it's sort of like the way my father understood. There was, you know, the Nazis cleared out a city from all of the, after they liquidated the ghetto. And they assumed so many Jews escaped and they fled into the forest. They let the local townspeople find them and search for them. Right? The war betides you if you're found, because then they're going to torture you to death until you reveal where you've hid all your treasure or where all your other, where the other partisans are hiding, you know, even if you didn't know, you know. Right? So they're all, that's the Edomites are the ones who look for the weak ones, right? We hate Amalek because Amalek attacked the weak ones in the back lines, right? So if wouldn't you think that you should leave the Olelos? Now here is a pun, because Olelos mean two things. Olelos means the unripe grapes that you're supposed to leave on the tree for the poor, right? And Olelos in Hebrew also means young children. Now you see why, because they're immature grapes and you know, children that are not matured yet. So wouldn't you think that you would leave the Olelos left behind? No, that wasn't you. So that's interesting, because in two later books of Tanakh, I say in Ksuvim, in Eicha, Sisi v'Simchi Bas Edom Yosheves Eretz Utz, right? Edom was all too happy to mop up what the Babylonians left behind, and that pasuk gets in Eicha like that. And also in Al Naros Bavel, by the waters of Babylon, right? Shom Yashavnu Gam Bochinu. In that parak, it ends by saying, right? Bas Bavel Hashuda. It says, and it speaks about Edom, right? It speaks about the fall of Edom there. So Edom is constantly joining other nations to conquer us. Alagvul pasuk vav. Ech nech pesu esav nivu matzbunav. Okay, here, nech pesu esav means how have they been revealed. Like, l'chapes means to find something, to uncover something. Nivu matzbunav means their treasures have been revealed. Or whatever they want to have hidden. I would like to understand this to be their true intentions. Right? Ahagvul shilchucha kol anshe brisecha, yishiyucha yachlulacha anshe shlomecha. So these are the people that the Edomites forge pacts So, you know, like you're that tiny little nation allying themselves with another great nation, another greater nation that's just going to use them to get at us. It's despicable. Right? Hello, Bayom Ahunu Mashem, Babadati Chachamim Me'edom Utfuna Me'Haresav.
Can't hear. I think we lost Rabbi Schwartz again.
Well, they might have controlled, the Persian Empire controlled that area, and it was conquered by Christendom for a very short period, but mostly it was just spread by Islamic conquests. Okay? I don't think it is historically accurate to in any way connect Esau to Christianity. Now, I admit that for the last 1600 years, or more like 1300 years, 1400 years, Jews fared better under Islam than under Christendom. Right? Jews, it wasn't a picnic, but it was still better under Islam. Right? So Islam certainly, Jews considered Islam to be, Islamic religion, not to be idolatrous. Christendom was to most commentaries. So here, well, you see where I'm just trying to go with this. That Ovadia never meant to identify with Christendom, but there are hints here, and he does identify with a futuristic picture of what Islam became. Okay, let's see where that's going. Okay, now, in starting Pasuk Yud, we're moving to about the halfway point of the Sefer. He discusses where is the source of his hatred? Okay, that's what we all know. It's back from Parshas Toldos. It's because of the enmity that existed between Yaakov and Esav. Now, but in our Parsha, in Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov certainly is worried that Esav wants to kill him, and he prepares for it. But as things turned out, it doesn't appear that Esav wants to kill him. In the very least, if we want to apply some nefarious intent to Esav, it's that Esav wants to show Yaakov that I could kill him. Because I'm such a good guy, I won't. But I could. Right? I don't know if he was coming out with 400 men to honor his brother. Right? In all fairness, Yaakov didn't try to sneak his way home. He sent the message to Esav. Passing by, I'd like to make up. Right? And by all means, it looks like they did. And then Esav invites Yaakov for a barbecue or something at his place, right? And Yaakov tells him, I'll come. I have to go more slowly. My kids, you know, all the goats and sheep will die if we go too fast, and the kids are young. So I'll tell you, there are two different types of misfortune. One is Rashi, that says that Yaakov, chas v'shalom, never went to Esav. He didn't want to be near Esav. And when he said, I'll meet you at Har Seir, he's talking about this. We'll get there shortly. The Choshur says, no, Yaakov did go to Esav. How do you know? It doesn't say so. Because he said he would. Not everything is written in the Torah. Yaakov went to Esav. He took his whole family there. They took pictures. They had a party, and they sent out, social media about all the kids and everything. Maybe they had relay races and bobbing for apples. I don't know. Maybe they had some fun. I don't know. But that's the Bechor Shor. He says that he did go. How do you know? Because he said he would. Right? So there was an attempt at some kind of rapprochement. Right? But Rivka knew better. Rivka knew, she bore these two boys. She knew that there was no redeeming qualities to saving them. So that was a message I sent out last week that Rivka purposely worked, perhaps with Yitzchak at it, to get Yaakov the bracha without Esav ruining his one final redeeming quality, which was his honor of his father. Right? Yitzchak's reputation had to be protected at the end of the day. Okay? So if that created a certain enmity that is manifest in Pasuk Yud, so be it. B'yom amadcha mineged b'yom shvos zorim chelo v'nachrim ba'u sharo v'al Yerushalayim yadu goral gam atok ha'achad mehem. Okay, this pasuk says it outright. Right? You put your hand with the destiny of all those other nations that came against Yerushalayim. Right? So you became like one of them, Gamatoke Achad Mehem, to fight against Yerushalayim. Right? You took your place. It wasn't a prominent place because you're a nothing nation. Right? But you were all too proud and too happy to join with everyone else in the destruction of our people, your brother. Okay? Right, so Al Tira Biyom Achicha Biyom Nachro, Al Tismach Livne Yehuda Biyom Avdam, Al Tigadel Picha Biyom Tzara. This is known as a tremendous Ayin Hara. Not to be glad at the difficulties of someone else, not to gloat when someone else is suffering, because you put an Ayin Hara for your own suffering. What's the nature of such an Ayin Hara? Because when that person sees you gloating, they're going to cry more. And God hears the tears. God counts the tears of every hurt soul and every aching heart. So if you're the cause of another person aching that way, it's a big fall. Yivchal tismach. Don't even be happy with the fall of your enemy. They did much worse. They joined the enemy. Right? They joined with the others. So he's saying here that all of this rejoicing you did at our downfall is going to come to haunt you big time. Not only, I mean, this is the ultimate irony. How did Edom meet its end? By converting to Judaism. Okay? As I said, this is well known to historians, and let's see how Obadiah starts to close out his book by implying this very point. Okay. So Pasuk Gimel, Al Tavo B'Sha'arami B'Yom Edom. Don't gloat at the gate. Here, Edom is one of those interesting words in the Bible where it means two different things, two the opposite things. B'Yom Eid sometimes means a holiday, a festive day, a day of celebration, or it can mean a day of destruction, a day of mourning. In the first Mishnah, Maseches Avodah Zarah, Lifnei Edeim Shalakum Shlosh Yom, there it means parties, festivals, holidays. Right? Here it obviously means the opposite. Okay? It's Edom with an Aleph. Okay? Why stand at the gate and rejoice at our destruction? Al Tera Gama Tabara So B'Yom Edo. Al Tishlachna B'Chelo B'Yom Edo. Three times in this pasuk. Right, the day of our downfall, the day of our destruction. Why do you have to gloat and enjoy it? All it does is it makes us angrier, but worse, it makes God angrier. Okay, this is what it means to put an Ayin Hara on someone. Right, this is what Hagar did to Sarah when she walked with arrogantly in front of Sarah and thought lightly of her because she was pregnant and the mistress is not. Or worse, Pnina in the face of Chana in the Haftarah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah. You all know what I'm talking about, right? Okay. It puts an Ayin Hara where a woman with 10 children is complaining about all the homework she has to do with her kids. And what do you think of this new little dress here? Be sensitive. I'm not saying you have to get crazy, but you have to be a little sensitive to people. You hear it? Okay. All right. So Edom is putting a significant Ayin Hara upon itself. Okay. And I don't mean that in the mystical sense. I think when the Gemara says that 999 out of 1,000 deaths are caused by Ayin Hara, I'm not sure that means the kind of thing that a Chamsa or a Shivisi or something else is going to protect you from, or an eye. You ever see people sell these little blue eyes? And there's little red bendels, right? You go to Beis Lechem or you go to Kotel and they're always giving you, give them $1 and they'll give you two of those little red strings. But this still is something that does exist. It exists in two ways. One, it angers the person who is the object of the hurt, and it strengthens them somehow, right? We'll finish in time, but remember it was the sixth game of the playoffs about 30 years ago, no, 25 years ago. Pacers and the Knicks. The Knicks were down 3-1, and Reggie Miller was on fire. He was hitting these 3-point play. And one time he hit a 3-point play, and he ran past the Knicks bench and did this, as if though they're choking, right? The Knicks were down like 25 points in the third quarter. They were down 3-1. Series is over. Somehow they got so riled up by that disgusting picture. What do you have to kick them in the head when they're down? If he had not done that, they probably would have won the game. But doing that got them so angered and so riled up, and they said, we have to just kick them down and they won that game. And then they won the series. All right? So that's an example of how the Ayin Hara works with the person who's hurt, but it also works with Kodesh Baruch Hu, because God hears the cries of the people who are pained. Okay? I use this at this digression now, more Torah in it, to answer a question I'm dealing with in passing on Friday night. There's an Oneg this Friday night here, a live Oneg, of how Yaakov could line up the three camps before Esav, where he puts Don Naphtali, Gad, and Asher with Zilpah and Bilhah in the front, Leah and her children in the middle, and Yosef and Rachel in the end. His intentions are quite clear because he states them, which is, if he kills this machaneh, would be a plate. Right? And you cannot allow to do that. He's putting up. We can't do that. So the answer is that there's a pasuk in Koheles that says, "Ve'elokim mevakeshes nirdaf." God presses the case of the weak. He presses the case of the infirmed and the ones without protection. The more someone has no protection, the more God is going to protect them. And of course, there have been times in history where God seems to be oblivious and not protecting at all. But in terms of the way Yaakov understood God's presence in his life, he just felt that the Bnei Shvachos are the most vulnerable. So therefore, they are the ones most likely to be helped by God. So I'll put them in the front and God will protect them. So otherwise, it's really quite difficult what Yaakov is doing. Okay, let's go on. So, because the world needs the upheaval that the Babylonians are bringing. Okay? And that is... okay? So that is this reference to God will give you this cup to drink from. Just like all the nations drank. They'll drink the la'u. Some of Farshim say the la'u is like the na'u. Lamed nun interchange quite often, especially in late books of Tanakh. In Nehemiah, this mamish, the same pasuk has two words, lishka and then nishka. So na'u means to stagger, like a drunken person. Okay? In the Mount of Zion, that's where the remnant shall remain. That's where the remnant shall be. Okay? Yoshu beis Yaakov beis Morasheim. And the house of Yaakov will inherit what they leave behind. Wow. This pasuk can be an historical reference. This can be an historical reference to the fact that there's a never-ending presence of Jews in Yerushalayim. It's true that during the time of the Crusades, when the Muslims won out, they killed every Christian and Jew. When the Christians won out, they killed every Muslim and Jew. Right? Jews, of course, never had the ability to win anything. But the Jews always remained. There were always Jews in Yerushalayim. Okay? So that the remnant of those Jews will be there at a time where we're living that time. No one could read Ovadia the way we can. Or many other books of the Bible, speaking of the fulfillment of these amazing prophecies. V'haya beis Yaakov eish, beis Yosef lehava, beis Esav lekash. Now, when he mentions Yosef specifically, It's because Yosef was the progenitor of the northern tribes. Yaakov represented the whole nation, and Yosef, the breakaway of the northern tribes, always were ruled by a descendant of Yosef, sometimes Ephraim, sometimes Menashe. So they will be a flame, and Esau will be straw. Yikes. There will be no remnant for Esav left. So how could this be Christianity? Judaism thinks that Ovadia teaches that Christianity is going to be like erased? How is that? Secularism? What does that mean? Right? It's a reference to Edom, and this happened already. It happened over 2,000 years ago. Okay? I don't think we have to go searching. It still has relevance for our own time. Okay? All right? When it says, Lo yiyes sorid lebeis Esav, there will be no remnant of the house of Esav. I see what that means. Yoshua negev es har se Esav, ashvela es plishtim. Yoshua ste Ephraim, ste Shomron, uvinyamin es hagilad. So this means, this talks about how Jews will once again spread out to these places. This, for this reason, I prefer that this Ovadia is not the Ovadiahu in Melachim. First of all, it's not the same name. Vavs in names fall out. Vavs in names fall out in later times. Eliyahu becomes Eliyah. Did you know that? Hinei anochi shaleach lachem eis Eliyah anavi. Okay? So I think that the only way that something like this can make sense, right, of all of these places being inherited by the Israelite people, sometime in the future, means that at the time it's being said, the Jews aren't living there. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't say today, days are coming and Jews will return to Beersheba, and Jews will return to Haifa and Tel Aviv. And it has to be a time when we're not living there. And that couldn't be the first of Ovadiahu. The Jews controlled a large swatch they took over a lot of land from all around at that time. Some of those points was the largest land mass Israel ever controlled in its whole entire history. Right? As opposed to if Ovadia is a contemporary of Yirmiyahu, and together they work on this Edomite listing here, 49 of Yirmiyahu, chapter 49 in Ovadia. So then it does make sense to refer to a time where Jews will return to these lands. Okay? Begalus hechel hazel ibnei Yisrael asher knanim at Tzorfas ugalus Yerushalayim asher besfarad Yerushua Yisarei HaNegev. Oh. So Mephoshim do say that this is France and Spain. It says Jews will spread out into all these places. Okay, Bravanel talks about the Spanish Inquisition from this pasuk, but I think it's the Spanish expulsion, of course. But I think this is a reference to Jews not being the only ones, but certainly Jews being a significant community that spreads far and wide, right, to the four corners of the world. All right, so the Jews became a community in Tsarfat, it would be France, in Sfarad, in Spain, okay. And Yeshua Yisarei HaNegev, and they will also spread in the southerly direction. It's interesting because in Sefer Yecheskel, Yecheskel gives a map of future Israel. And it's amazing because it spreads out, can't spread anywhere west because that's the Mediterranean, but it spreads far east, far east, past Jordan, way far, but not south. It doesn't go down to Eilat. Right? It goes far east, but not south. So here, Ovadia comes and says that they will spread to Esarei HaNegev. Now, it could be Yecheskel Nevad. You're referring to two different time periods, stages. And when all that happens, V'alu Moshe and Bahar Tzion, we spoke at Harisot. V'hisol Hashem Hamlucha. So the way Chazal, the way our sages, the way our Midrashim understood this, is that the one thing that's going to be an impediment to God's kingdom being realized is something regarding Edom. Edom is going to keep that kingdom from being realized. Right? So when those Moshiim come to Har Etzion, Mishpot et Har Esav, at that point, the Malucha will be God. Okay, so at that time, the Malucha will be gods. So this fits well with the Mechilta and other Midrashim that God, it says, Ki Yod Al Kes Ka, God's throne is diminished because of Edom and especially Amalek. God's throne is not a full throne because of Amalek. It's not called a Kisei, it's called Kes. It's not Yud Kevavke, it's just Yud Nehe. Right? It's missing an Aleph, a Vav, and a He. Yivol L'moshav Lo. We want that God can get his kingdom, Kevayachol. Now God, of course, can do whatever he wants. He's God. But the Shekhinah wants to rest in a world of justice, mercy, and peace. So when people are behaving in a way that where Amalek is running the roost, and Edom is ruling, so okay. So in a parsha that deals with Yaakov and Esav, we once again, for the second time in 3 weeks, and the third time in 3 weeks, actually make reference to the relationship, but the second time speak of Esav as a nation. And let's not be fooled. Esav never amounted to a great nation status. We should have I prefer a sort of a minimalist kind of approach to what Edom ever became, right? And they came and went. Okay, it might not make for a reading, but I think that's the simplest part. Okay, everybody. Please keep in touch about how we're going to do this next week, okay?